the lyrics of a Christian song say that waiting is the most bitter lesson a believing heart has to learn. Do you agree? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author, and we're continuing our 13-week series entitled In the Crucible with Christ. And my conversation partners for our lesson today are Dr. David Thomas, retired professor of theology at Walla Walla University. And I don't think I've mentioned it, Dave, but also the longest serving dean in the School of Theology for 17 years. And I also have with me Pastor James Ash, one of my colleagues from undergrad and seminary, and current pastor of the State Line Seventh-day Adventist Church. So back to this phrase. The song is a song by a singer-songwriter whose music is mostly very biblical. His name is Michael Card, and his song here, lyrics, he says, "Waiting is the most bitter lesson a believing heart has to learn." And the song is entitled Maranatha, that is, waiting for the coming of Christ, waiting for Jesus to come back. Would you say that waiting is a bitter lesson? Would you agree with him, or would you say that, well, it's hard, maybe not the most bitter?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that definitely it's very difficult to, as the Bible says, to be still and to know that God is God. It definitely is a lesson that every person it's very challenging to say the least. I'm not sure if it's the most bitter lesson.
I do not like to wait. I have to be honest. I don't like to wait.
It's hard.
Especially if I'm waiting for somebody to pay me money they owe me. You know, and I don't know why that is. I don't know. It's not often that people owe me money, but
sure.
If you show up for an appointment, then let's get on with the appointment and this idea of waiting. And here's one place where I admire the people I grew up among. In Africans, as a people, have a capacity to wait that I am completely astonished by.
Really?
Yeah. They can wait for hours without aggravation, you know.
Just a different pace of their life.
I watched a woman waiting for a bus one day. For a whole day, the bus broke down or something was waiting. She sat there by the side of the road. She didn't complain about anything. She sat there. I have no idea what she was doing in her mind. She sat there and waited, never complained, never fussed, never looked at her watch. She just waited until the bus came. And I thought, if that had been me, I would have been walked 10 miles already down the road looking for that thing.
But what is it for us about patience and delayed gratification and waiting, putting our desires behind those of others and looking to the end goal rather than now? You know, the quarterly talked about maybe an experiment that you've seen. They tested a bunch of young children. They put a marshmallow on a plate and put it in front of them, and they said, if you will wait 20 minutes to eat this marshmallow, I'll give you another one. And then they left the room and left the child alone with the marshmallow. And there were kids who waited, and there were kids who didn't.
I bet there were very few that waited. Depending on the age.
It was they were in the range of 7 and 8 years old, and about half of them waited and half of them did not. What is fascinating is this is a longitudinal, decade-long study, and they examined them all once they grew up.
Really?
And they tested those who had waited versus those who had not in all kinds of areas of life, and they found that those who had delayed gratification were more successful, more happy, had made better choices in their lives than those who had not.
Yeah.
That means it's a very early lesson to begin learning patience.
You know, and I think that's also evident in parents' parenting too, when parents just give their kids all these gifts and just shower them with gifts and they don't teach them to the value of hard work, of saving up and purchasing something with your own hard-earned money.
Yeah.
And so on. And those kids that who have parents who are willing to show the true kind of love are kids that value things. They don't come at society with a kind of entitlement, like, you know, you need to do this for me and you need to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so those are the people of society that you know, the ones that have learned the value of hard work. And so hard work, it means going out there and sweating and working hard and so on, and delayed gratification.
Not getting it now, not getting the results now. Dave, you've told me that you grew up in a home where hard work was part of life, that it was expected of you.
Yeah.
I think that is not always the case. And you develop patience and you develop waiting for the crop to come when you have to work that way. In the Old Testament, there is a metaphor for God that shows up in Exodus chapter 34 and also in Numbers 14:8. God says that he is slow to anger, he's gracious, he's compassionate, he's abounding in loving kindness and truth. But the phrase slow to anger or long suffering in some translations is literally and two long noses in the Hebrew. And I remember when I first heard that, I thought, well, I don't ever want a literal Old Testament then, because I don't want my Bible saying that. What does that even mean? And our teacher at the seminary said, oh, well, the nose is the seat of emotion of anger, because it gets hot and your face gets red, and the nose, the longer your nose is, the longer it takes you to get angry. But God, he's not like us. He has two long noses, so it takes him twice as long at least to get angry as we do. And it's a picturesque way of saying that God is patient. God is under control much longer than we would ever be. Hmm. How does this picture of God help you understand his reaction to sin and injustice in the world, and even those who would rail against him, and those who would say, God, you're not getting your act together and cleaning up this world of sin. Why aren't you doing something about it? How long do we have to wait? How does this passage help you with that?
You know, I think we're fortunate that God is not like us. You know, because if God was to act in some of the ways that maybe we would want him to act, this world would have been destroyed long ago. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that God is long-suffering. You know, it says in Peter, it says that God is not willing that any should perish.
Yeah, he's patient.
But that all should come to repentance.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
So let's think about patience then for a moment. In Galatians 5:22-23.
You know, Brent, before you go there, I thought this comes to me that the Bible talks about the wrath of God. And I used to think that was like fiery temper, you know. Yeah, you guys had it, now I'm going to give it to you, you know. But I forget who wrote this, but he said that the best definition he ever found of the wrath of God is it's God's settled determination to rid the world of evil and its residues. And that helped me a lot, because God's patience is manifested in a deliberate strategy to rid the universe of evil. It's not a hit or miss or sudden explosion like he lost temper. That he's determined to be rid of sin and evil while preserving the volitional nature of humans, so that love may be the core element of the universe. And see, so.
And that takes a while.
Yeah, the long-suffering nature of God is part of the wrath of God, that he is moving in a deliberate manner. Now, that has a very sobering implication, is that if you want to enmesh yourself, if you want to fascinate with yourself with evil, you can count on the fact that you will have an encounter with the wrath of God, but it won't be a sudden flare of temper. It will be that as he destroys evil, you will go with it.
You know, I think one of the common misconceptions is that an internal combustion engine has an explosion. It's not an explosion.
That slow happens burn.
It's a quick burn, but it's very calculated, just like you said. Yeah. It's very calculated, and it drives. It creates all of this incredible horsepower.
And the higher the octane, the more controlled the burn, right?
Hmm. Right. Yeah. And they've actually taken pictures inside of a cylinder, and you can actually see the way the flame, you know, the progression of the ignition. It's a very powerful thing. But again, many people who are uninformed, they'll look at that and they'll say, oh, it's just exploding all these many times. No, it's not an explosion. It's a very calculated burn.
And a diesel is the same way, because a diesel operates by compression. And then when it gets up to a certain compression, then the fuel ignites.
Yeah.
And it pushes even more slowly, I think, than gasoline. That's why diesel engines have much more torque than a gasoline engine.
So this is describing, what the two of you are doing is you're describing the character of God in dealing with the sin problem, and it also explains why we're waiting, that God's wrath, he is loath to pour out his wrath because he loves and cares, but ultimately he hands people over to their choices, as Romans 1 says. Yeah.
But Brian, there's more to it, too. I think that, you know, one of the most amazing things to me is when sin first appeared and God could no longer be in proximity to humans because holiness would consume unrighteousness. And so what did God do? And Patriarchs and Prophets is a great chapter on this, that he distanced himself from us, that we could have a place for our existence. And, you know, when God comes near us, we don't like it, as evidenced by Mount Sinai. You know, what the people say, oh, no, Moses, you go and talk with God, but don't tell him, please don't come near us. That God cannot be proximate to us because we would be consumed. That's also part of the long-sufferingness of God. He's done that so that we will have a place to live and for the story of sin to play out. But it doesn't change the fact that he's going to be rid of it one day.
He will. And I wonder about God's patience. James, you pointed out Peter, 2 Peter 3, that God is patient, not willing that any should perish. And so there's a reason for his waiting. But I wonder if it's possible for us to get to the point where we're comfortable waiting as well. You know, one of the fruit of the Spirit is patience. And it's been noted, and I think we've even talked about it here in a previous week, but that the fruit of the Spirit would not be necessary if there weren't people that we needed. Dave, you kind of said that. I wouldn't need to learn patience unless there were people around me who I needed patience to live with.
Right.
Right? Which means that love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, those are the result of being in community with people who are not loving or lovely or good people.
Well, that's where the shine gets put on those things, Brent.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I guess, where we learn them. So in the New Testament, we're told, there's a number of places where we're told to wait, or we're told that waiting will happen. The story of the 10 virgins, the bridesmaids are ready, but the groom isn't coming.
He's late.
And then we have the parable just before that, the end of chapter 24, where the servants say, oh, my master's delaying his coming. He begins to eat and drink with drunkards. So there's this, again, this waiting. Habakkuk reminds us to wait for the vision, though it tarries. Still, it will, you know, it will wait for it. Citizens of the kingdom were told to wait. How about King David being told, well, I'll let you get everything ready for the temple, but you're going to have to wait to have it built. In fact, your son's going to build it. Abraham never even built a city in the land that he was told would be his. Never even built a city.
Right.
He's waiting. And the book of Hebrews tells us it's because he knew that God had promised him the whole world and that the city that God was going to build was the city that he wanted to be part of. Waiting.
Yeah.
Waiting. How do you make it through the trials of this life waiting? I mean, Dave, you're retired now. I imagine there's a part of you that hoped you would never come to this age and that Jesus would come sooner.
Oh, yeah, I've thought that for many years. But I got to tell you a story. My maternal grandmother became an Adventist as a child. Her mother converted to Adventism when she was just a little girl. And when she was 90, well, just to tell you that when she was a young woman living in England, the ladies in the church all got together to have a meeting to talk about creating a school to educate their children. And my grandmother was not yet married. She was only about 18. But they invited all the young women, even the unmarried ones. And she laughed. She refused to go. She says, I will never have any children. I'll never be married, let alone have children. Jesus will be here. Well, when she was 90, I visited with her. She was living with my uncle at Andrews University. And I had a wonderful couple hours just talking to her about her life. And at one point she said, you know, she says, I've been waiting all my life for Jesus to come and he hasn't come. And I wonder if he's going to come. You know, that kind of like, wow, Grandma. And then she said almost immediately, but I'm not giving that hope up now. She said, I don't care if he comes or not, I'm waiting.
Oh, bless her heart.
And you know, Lauren Dickinson prayed a prayer here a while ago that struck me, because at the end of his prayer he said, Lord, rest assured that we are among those who are waiting and we will be looking for you when you come. I was like, oh boy, that was a nice way of putting it. That we are among those who will be waiting. We'll be waiting.
We're kind of holding you accountable to your promise.
We'll be waiting.
Yeah. James, a final thought from you on waiting, on patience.
You know, the hard part about waiting is generally you're anticipating something. You're looking forward to something that you really want.
Yeah.
I mean, there's I can't say that I have a hard time waiting for something that I don't want to happen.
Yeah.
Usually it's something
dentist
that,
appointment or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it's something that you really want, that you just wish that time would just go by so fast. But, you know, as Adventists are people that are waiting. You know, and so that is, I think, what really galvanizes us as a people. We are people who are occupying until Jesus comes. Mm-hmm. And in that process of waiting, there is work to be done.
Yeah, there is. And I would love to just note that word Adventist then is far more inclusive than just people of my denomination.
Yeah.
For the number of people waiting to see their Lord, that number is huge. And I praise God for those
Absolutely.
Who are waiting and can't
Absolutely.
Wait to see Jesus come. Our time is up. Next week, we're going to look at the topic, Dying Like a Seed. We only have a couple weeks left of this quarter, but my thanks again, James and Dave, for your conversations and your stories. They make this rich. Thank you again also to Rick Baskett, who's helping us with our engineering, and to the State Line Church, and to all of you who are listening in. Thank you again for taking time for us for the good word and for the
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.